Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, February 5th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
President Robert Mugabe has declared a state of disaster in Zimbabwe gripped by a severe drought.
The declaration itself is useful. I think the only sad thing is that it's coming, in my view, a month too late, because if we had made the declaration a year ago, people would have then included us in their plan.
The United States government has lifted sanctions imposed on two Zimbabwean banks which were on the list of business entities barred from doing business with Washington.
And War Veterans Minister Christopher Mutsangwa claims that Higher Education Minister Jonathan Moyo is the son of the late nationalist Ndabaningi Sithole.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. President Robert Mugabe has declared a state of disaster following a severe drought worsened by unprecedented high temperatures that have affected most parts of the country. Local Government Minister Xavier Kasukwere last night released a statement on behalf of Mr. Mugabe which indicated that the declaration was with effect from February 2nd. Opposition legislators have been calling for Mr. Mugabe to make the declaration since last year, when it became apparent that the country was not going to meet its food requirements after harvesting only 700,000 tons of grain against a national requirement of 1,800 million tons. 3 million people are in dire need of food, and the figure is expected to rise due to scarce rains this season. Agronomist Mandla Nkomo tells Studio 7 that the declaration of a state of disaster, although coming late, would make it easier for local and international organizations to mobilize resources for Zimbabwe.
The declaration itself is useful. I think the only sad thing is that it's coming, in my view, a month too late, because if we had made the declaration a year ago, people would have then included us in their plans in as far as mobilizing resources that would be required to try and address what is going to be a very difficult period for us.
We have heard from donor organizations like WFP and so forth saying that donor fatigue may be responsible for their failure to raise enough money to help Zimbabwe buy food. So this declaration, will it help in any way?
And I'm not entirely convinced that the only reason is that there's a lack of willingness from the donors to support. But I think it's the practicality of not really being able to do much at this point. I'm not convinced that, given the gravity of the situation, that donors will not be willing to assist. But I'm also not convinced that they will have ability and the means to do a significant, to have a significant impact on where we are right now. So I think we're really in a tough spot. And you must remember that the likes of WFP and FAO and others had moved towards what they call homegrown solutions, where food is sourced within the region and transported within the region. But we don't have food this year. So I think it's going to be a real challenge.
That was agronomist Mandla Nkomo. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from South Africa.
Meanwhile, Central Bank Governor John Mangujga says the government should finalize its long-drawn land reform program and stop farm invasion so as to bring stability in the agricultural sector, which he says will translate to economic development. Presenting his monetary policy yesterday, Mr. Mangujga said measures that could be taken to reduce uncertainty and increase investment and agricultural productivity include cooling off the continuing disruptions and threats to farmers, particularly in the dairy, cattle breeding, horticulture, and tobacco subsectors. He also called for the compensation of displaced white commercial farmers. But opposition MDCT Organizing Secretary Abednego Bebe tells reporter Ntungamili Nkomo it's all empty talk.
The most important thing that people have to understand is there is no way that the same government that has actually presided over the destruction of the same economy, the destruction of the same farms, can actually turn around and say they are able to fix. Was in the first place, before they started destroying, they should have had plans to try and put things in order so that the economy can be improved like any other country, I mean countries of the world. So we are seeing a situation here where Dr. Manguja is just singing the usual song that we always hear year after year, and we are not seeing any change. All what we know for a fact is we are being governed or we are being ruled by a country that is led by corrupt government officials that has presided over this economy for 35 years, and they've presided over the destruction, per se.
He is also calling for the compensation of white commercial farmers who were displaced from their farms. What's your take on that?
They should have planned for compensation before they are expropriated or they forcibly kicked out the white farmers.
Opposition MDCT Organizing Secretary Abednego Bebe on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo.
The United States government has lifted sanctions imposed on two Zimbabwean banks which were on the list of business entities barred from doing business with Washington. In a statement, the U.S. Treasury said, quote, following today's removal of Agribank and IDBZ from the list of specially designated nationals and blocked persons, a license is no longer required to engage in transactions with those entities. Agribank and the Infrastructure Development Bank of Zimbabwe were among more than 200 entities and individuals barred from doing business with American companies or holding assets in the world's largest economy as part of sanctions imposed against President Robert Mugabe and his inner circle in 2003 for alleged human rights abuses. But Harare says the sanctions were imposed when it sought to address the land question by redistributing it to the majority blacks. ZANU-PF spokesperson Simon Kayamoyo told Studio 7 that the easing of sanctions is a non-event. Responding, however, Washington-based human rights activist Jeff Smith says the sanctions are justified as ZANU-PF does not respect human rights.
The statement from ZANU-PF is not surprising. We've been hearing similar statements from ZANU-PF leadership since 2003 when these targeted sanctions were first enacted. And I think a good reminder is to counter ZANU-PF propaganda where they essentially say there's an overall sanctions on the country or somehow there's an embargo on the country, when in fact that's not anywhere close to being the truth. We have to remind ourselves that the targeted sanctions, I think to this day, only apply to about just over 100 Zimbabwean individuals. And now, I think with the removal of the two banks, I think between 65 to 68 entities, mostly legal entities that are owned or affiliated with the individuals that are under sanctions.
But the critics of the sanctions actually say they have not done anything to move the needle. ZANU-PF is still as oppressive, they allege, as ever, and therefore the sanctions must just be removed in total.
That's certainly an argument we often hear when talking about U.S. policy towards Zimbabwe, but I think you have to look at the reason why, or the many reasons why the sanctions were applied in the first place. And that's because of the deterioration of the rule of law in the country, including a severe and evident lack of respect for basic rights, including the right to private property.
That was human rights activist Jeff Smith speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Washington.
The World Bank says it will continue to offer Zimbabwe technical support only until the country clears its arrears to international creditors, totaling $1.86 billion. Harare started defaulting on its debt to the IMF, World Bank, African Development Bank, and several Western lenders in 1999 and is struggling to emerge from a catastrophic recession that ran for a decade until 2008. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa, working with the creditors last year, tabled a plan that he claimed will see Zimbabwe clearing its arrears by April. Economists, though, see this as a mission impossible. World Bank Zimbabwe senior economist Johannes Hiderski tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the bank is working with Harare to help the country's economy to recover.
Well, Zimbabwe is still in arrears to the World Bank and to other creditors, so we don't have access to our normal lending instruments. But we do have a trust fund, which is the Zimbabwe Economic Recovery Fund, the ZIMREF fund, we call it, that allows us to provide limited resources in a small number of sectors. We have a small project in the water sector, which was signed yesterday. We have an investment project with small resources for the public finance management sector. We have some resources for the health sector. But the main thing is technical assistance. It is really to help the government design reforms that they can do themselves. These are not big investment projects. These are technical assistance.
So at the moment, it's just technical assistance. But Zimbabwe seems to be saying that they need a lot of financial assistance.
That's right. I mean, Zimbabwe could benefit a lot from investments, both the national investment, foreign investment, from our investment projects. But at the moment, as long as the arrears are there, we cannot engage in normal lending here. Once the arrears are cleared, we would once again engage in normal investment lending that we do in many countries around the world.
That was World Bank Zimbabwe senior economist Johannes Hiderski speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Meanwhile, the lifting of the sanctions come at a time when Zimbabwean Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa today dismissed recent calls by a U.S. senator for the African country to implement more reforms as a condition for new international lending. The request came from Senator Bob Corker, chairman of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee. In a letter last Thursday to Secretary of the Treasury Jack Lew, which has removed sanctions against two Zimbabwean banks, Senator Corker said lines of credit to Zimbabwe should be only open if there's meaningful progress in the country's democratization process. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare for VOA.
Last week, Senator Bob Corker asked that the U.S. government's representatives at institutions like the World Bank, IMF, and African Development Bank block fresh funding to Zimbabwe until it shows progress on the rule of law and human rights. Corker made the request in a letter to U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew. Finance Minister Chinamasa said Senator Corker had no idea of what was really taking place in Zimbabwe.
So he needs to be educated on a wide range of issues that affect Zimbabwe, and he should not be swayed by the distorted information that he receives about our country. It will be quite helpful for the senator to engage those who have been engaging us, the IMF, the World Bank, and African Development Bank. But we are very surprised, though, that Senator Bob Corker should take this view.
Earlier this week, the finance minister said he would engage new U.S. Ambassador Harry Thomas Jr. once he is accredited, so that the Obama administration would have a better understanding of President Robert Mugabe's government. Senator Corker's letter said any new lending without reforms could significantly alter Zimbabwe's political dynamics and help entrench, quote, the very same individuals responsible for the country's economic collapse and gross human rights violations, unquote. According to Corker's letter, Zimbabwe owes $1.9 billion to the World Bank, IMF, and AFDB. All have stopped lending to the Southern African nation. Over the past months, Zimbabwe has been asking them to reschedule debt repayment while allowing it to access fresh funding. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Coming up,
War Veterans Minister Christopher Mutswangwa claims that Higher Education Minister Jonathan Moyo is allegedly the son of the late nationalist Ndabaningis Tole.
And Zimbabwe and South Sudan sign a memorandum of understanding to educate students and share expertise.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
U.S. President Barack Obama praised for unity in America during his first visit to a U.S. mosque as the nation's leader, telling Muslims that, quote, we are one American family. During remarks Wednesday at the Islamic Society of Baltimore, the president thanked Muslim Americans for helping to build the U.S. and make it strong. He also acknowledged the hugely distorted negative view Muslim Americans have had to endure with the rise of terrorism related to violence by Islamist extremists.
Your entire community so often is targeted or blamed for the violent acts of the very few. The Muslim American community remains relatively small, so several million people in this country, and as a result, most Americans don't necessarily know, or at least don't know that they know, a Muslim person. And as a result, many only hear about Muslims and Islam from the news after an act of terrorism or in distorted media portrayals in TV or film, all of which gives this hugely distorted impression.
The president criticized the remarks by Republican presidential candidates Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, and others in recent months.
And of course, recently we've heard inexcusable political rhetoric against Muslim Americans that has no place in our country. No surprise then that threats and harassment of Muslim Americans have surged. Here at this mosque, twice last year, threats were made against her children. Around the country, women wearing the hijab, just like Saba, have been targeted. We've seen children bullied, we've seen mosques vandalized.
Trump called for all Muslims to be barred from entering the country for a period of time, and Cruz suggested that the United States resettle only Christian Syrian refugees. During his remarks, Obama reaffirmed Americans' constitutional right to freedom of religion.
At a time when others are trying to divide us along lines of religion or sect, we have to reaffirm that most fundamental of truths. We are all God's children. We're all born equal with inherent dignity. And so often we focus on our outward differences and we forget how much we share. Christians, Jews, Muslims, we're all under our faiths, descendants of Abraham. So mere tolerance of different religions is not enough. Our faiths summon us to embrace our common humanity. O mankind, the Quran teaches, we have made you peoples and tribes that you may know one another.
Sheikh Ismail Dua of the Supreme Council for Islamic Affairs in Zimbabwe says Mr. Obama should walk the talk.
And South Africa's opposition Democratic Alliance Party says its case against President Jacob Zuma's private house upgrade will proceed next week as originally planned, despite the president's offer to pay back some of the public funds used for the upgrade.
Zimbabwean opposition parties say they are yet to start coalition talks despite mounting pressure from citizens that they should team up in order to mount a formidable challenge against President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party in the 2018 elections. Our correspondent Thomas Ripasi has more details from the capital city, Harare.
Addressing his first news conference this year at his party's Harvest House headquarters, former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai said his party is yet to begin coalition negotiations with other opposition parties, although some Zimbabweans feel that these talks are long overdue.
There are no coalition talks that I'm aware of. People wish that the opposition would coalesce, work together. We also believe that's the best way. That's why I've called for the opposition to regroup. When the time comes, when the elections time comes, perhaps it will dawn on all political parties to find some coalition platform to discuss about it. At the moment, there is no coalition talks.
Tsvangirai made these remarks only a day after MDCT spokesperson Obed Gutu told Studio 7 that coalition talks were at an advanced stage, promising Zimbabweans that the party leader was going to deliver the good news on the progress of the negotiations in due course. However, local newspapers have been reporting that the opposition parties are meeting secretly with a view of forming a grand coalition ahead of the next elections. Mr. Tsvangirai's remarks were echoed by Kurawone Chiwai, spokesperson of the MDC formation led by Professor Walshman Ncube.
The MDC is not in talks with any political party at the moment, and we are not at the station waiting for anyone.
Studio 7 failed to get a comment from People's Democratic Party leader Tendai Biti and Rugare Gumbo, the interim spokesperson of the yet-to-be-launched People First Party. Although some of the major opposition parties have said that talks are yet to start, political analyst David Masunda says time is fast running out for the opposition as the 2018 polls draw close.
I think the opposition parties are not really very serious about this issue because they really know that the elections are coming in the 16 or so months, and yet they're still bickering on small issues. I think the core of the matter is the bitterness on how they separated some of those elements, especially from the MDC, and they need to address exactly why they're separated. So even if they grandstand and appear as if they're going to have a coalition, it is not going to be an easy thing to do. It's not something they can do overnight. They need to overcome all the differences that they had.
Against the backlash from his former party secretary General Biti and Elton Mangoma, who was treasurer of the MDCT, before the two broke ranks with the former prime minister, Tsvangirai said he was ready to work with all opposition players in a bid to defeat ZANU-PF in elections.
We are very magnanimous. We will work with Mangoma, we will work with Biti, not on the basis of the so-called intellectual prowess, but on the basis that we need to unite the people of Zimbabwe. That is, if they have any followers.
After breaking away from Tsvangirai, Biti and Mangoma formed the MDC renewal team, but the two split again last year over leadership squabbles. Mangoma now leads his own party called Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe. Tsvangirai said, judging from President Mugabe's remarks at the recent African Union summit held in the Ethiopian capital of Addis Ababa, that he would remain in politics until God calls him, it is now clear that Mr. Mugabe wants to die in office. He revealed that this view was shared by former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The war of words in ZANU-PF has escalated, with War Veterans Minister Christopher Mutswangwa making a sensational claim that Higher Education Minister Jonathan Moyo is allegedly the son of ZANU founding president, the late veteran nationalist Ndabaningi Sithole. His remarks come at a time when the two are engaged in a bitter war of words over succession battles in the ruling party. Our correspondent Taurai Shava brings us more.
Mutswangwa recently told the local press that Moyo, who accused him of allegedly stealing and selling women's underwear during the War of the Liberation of the 1970s, was Sithole's nephew. But now Mutswangwa alleges that the Cholocho-born Moyo is a love child of the late veteran politician, a claim that could neither be denied nor confirmed by the education minister and the Sithole family. Mutswangwa made the claims yesterday in Zimbabwe's second largest city, Bulawayo, at a workshop designed to realign the War Veterans Act to the Constitution. The War Veterans Minister, who was guest of honor, deviated from his prepared speech and attacked Moyo, accusing him of allegedly being used by some unnamed Western countries to destroy President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party. Mutswangwa claimed that he has evidence that the higher education minister is the son of the late Sithole and challenged him to go for a DNA test if he is denying these allegations. Pressed by journalists to clarify his assertions on the sidelines of the workshop, Mutswangwa said he stood by his remarks and was prepared to meet Moyo in court.
I have asked him to have his DNA tested. And this is the Preskirk Court. DNA must be tested so that he can disprove that someone is not stolen child. Maybe he's a lap child.
Mchangwa's claims follow Moyo's recent attack on him, alleging that the war veterans leader was a rogue successionist and was a, quote, underwear thief during the liberation struggle. Moyo has claimed that Mchangwa is a close associate of presidential spokesperson George Charamba, whom he attacked recently for allegedly supporting so-called successionists he said were attempting to topple President Mugabe. Charamba and Mchangwa are believed to be close associates of Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is allegedly harboring presidential ambitions and is engaged in a bitter war with Young Turks, calling themselves the Generation 40 or G40, backing First Lady Grace Mugabe for Zimbabwe's topmost political post. The spat between Mchangwa and Moyo typifies the factional fights within the ruling party as the battle to succeed President Mugabe intensifies. But Mchangwa dismissed the observation that the infighting could destroy ZANU-PF, saying the ruling party had weathered bigger storms in the past. Political observers say these clashes may ultimately lead to bloodshed in the ruling party, a situation that is likely to plunge Zimbabwe into a crisis. Independent analyst Butler Tambo shares this view.
This has to be reined in. But most of all, I think the president really has to put his foot down and get hold of these contesting parties within ZANU-PF so that we have order once more in this country. Because what is needed is investor confidence. What is needed is foreign direct investment to come into the country. Because the way I see it, we might end up having real civil strife in this country.
President Mugabe, who is expected to be the ruling party's presidential candidate in 2018, turns 92 this month, making him the oldest president in the world. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shala.
In our sports segment, Zimbabwean rugby followers will this weekend be treated to a rugby tournament in Harare. Michael Cariati has more.
Zimbabwe sports lovers are in for a rare treat when the National Sports Stadium hosts the Super Rugby Show between traditional rivals the Vodacom Bulls and the Toyota Cheetahs on Saturday. This is a preparatory match for the two sides before the Super Rugby Series 2016 program rose into life on February 26. This is the first time that Zimbabwe will be playing host to a rugby match of this magnitude, and the giant national stadium should be full to the brim despite the high gate charges. Zimbabwe Rugby Union General Manager Sifiso Made says the cheapest seat will be going for as much as $10, while those wishing to sit on the VVIP stand are expected to dish out as much as $100.
Tickets are being sold through web tickets, and I know that they are varied prices. Mm-hmm. I mean, kids, we start from $1, $2, but it goes on to $10, $25, and of course your VVIP, and I think about $100.
Made says it will be a day to remember, as there will be a host of appetizers prior to the main match. Despite the high gate charges, rugby enthusiast Rangarai Manimutsira says he will be there with his family to enjoy the occasion.
So I'll be taking my family there and hope to have a lot of fun. I think it will be an exciting moment to have fun and also watch the game.
Last season, the Cheetahs finished 12th, while the Bulls were better in 9th position on the final Vodacom Super Rugby Series standings. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Thank you, Michael. And please, Zimbabwe, remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when Blessing Zulu and Gibbs Dube will be talking with listeners and experts about a devastating drought gripping Zimbabwe.
And now to recap today's top stories.
President Robert Mugabe has declared a state of disaster in Zimbabwe gripped by a severe drought.
The United States government has lifted sanctions imposed on two Zimbabwean banks which were on the list of business entities barred from doing business with Washington.
That's our broadcast this evening. Thank you for joining us. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntungamili Nkomo. This is Jonga Kandemiri.